Welcome to Podcast Guru, brought to you by GHM Marketing. Our guest today is Barry O'Reilly. He is the co-founder and chief incubation officer at Nobody Studios, a venture studio that de-risks pre-seed stage business ideas by validating scalable business models before significant venture investment. Today, expect to learn the importance of how leaders play a critical role in guiding their teams through unlearning, explore the concept of unlearning as a key skill for navigating constant change, the approach of assessing problem-solving experiences to identify talent, and the importance of continuous growth and self-awareness in achieving success. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast, and if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast, and we're going to keep bringing you amazing different gurus in the podcast industries to explain to you all the different ways you can use your podcast to help and grow your business. And with that, here's Barry.
Barry, can you tell me about this name, Unlearn? How did you come up with it?
Yeah, so, you know, I was lucky enough to be involved in writing a book previously called Lean Enterprise. It was part of the Eric Ries Lean series or the Lean Startup movement. And it suddenly got me invites to do keynotes and work with executives and Fortune 500 companies all over the world. And what I constantly found, while I'd go in and work with some of the most talented, gifted people in the world, the challenge was never teaching them new things. You know, they were always open to trying new behaviors, running experiments, doing things differently. But what was the constant limiting factor was not their ability to learn new things. It was the inability to unlearn or let go of behaviors and mindsets that had made them successful in the past, but were no longer working. And it was sort of a struggle of mine for a long time. I would sit there and go, what's the problem here? Because these people are smart. You know, they're running these multi-billion dollar companies. They're not afraid of learning, but they aren't able to unlearn. And that was sort of the eureka moment for me. And that really what inspired the whole thinking behind the book is, how can I help people to let go of behaviors and mindsets that were successful, but now are outdated? And that really what inspired me to write the book.
I love that. Can you give me an example of something that a Fortune 500 head of company would be like unable to unlearn or struggling to unlearn that could really enable further growth?
Yeah, one of sort of the favorite examples and talk a little bit about the book is that I was working with one of the senior executives of probably the top 5 largest banks in the U.S., and they were sort of new in the job, you know, and they just had started in the company. They were trying to make a splash. They were trying to understand how things would work. But they were sitting there saying that there was a challenge. Like literally everyone kept coming up to their door and asking them, you know, to make decisions about everything. Like what's the company strategy? What new market should they open with? But everything down to the point of what type of pens should we be ordering for the office? Are these the right post-it notes that we need? And she was sort of in this point where she was like, you know, there's sort of a problem here. There's a decision-making problem in this company where everyone seems to want to defer to the next person in priority. And it was sort of a challenge for her. And she's like, I've tried everything. I've told people they can make decisions. I've told people to not be afraid. You know, I'll back them if they make a bad choice. But everything from, you know, what kind of pens they should order right through to the company's purpose were sort of showing up at her door and this huge sort of backlog. Yeah. So I got her to sort of use this method that we describe in the book, which is really about writing this sort of future version of success, or almost like a press release in 1 or 2 years time. If we had sort of unlearned this decision-making problem, like what would be happening in the company? You know, she wrote this amazing sort of story, if you will, about, you know, people would make right-sized decisions. They would make reversible decisions where they could try, they were safe to fail. That, you know, she would only be talking about what success is and why it matters, never talk about how it was to be achieved. She would defer that, if you will, to sort of other members of the team. So as she wrote this story, I was able to sort of siphon through, you know, the different behaviors that she had identified that mattered. And in essence, write an unlearning statement for her based on that story. So we could sort of say things like, you know, I believe that we will unlearn decision-making in this company. We'll know it's true when sort of 100% of my direction is about what success is and why it matters. 0% is about how to do it. 0% of people demonstrate this learned helplessness around decision making. So once we had sort of written what this success was and wrote it in, if you will, a quantifiable, testable way, then it was just about running experiments to try and move in that direction. So one of the ones that was interesting to both of us was this idea of 0% of my time is how to actually achieve something. So I sort of provocatively said to her, well, why don't you make a statement to say you're never going to make a decision again? You know, and for her, she's like, well, I'm sort of the senior executive of a Fortune sort of 50 here, really. I can't tell people I'm never going to make a decision. You know, if I announced that to the company, they'll fire me straight away. And I was like, okay, well, that's probably too big. But could we take that intent and do something sort of smaller, safer, that you could learn sooner? And she sort of had this idea of actually, okay, maybe I won't make a decision for a day, or maybe I could push it and try and not make a decision, you know, for a few days. And I was like, perfect. Right? So the sort of challenge then was, we made it this prompt. Anytime somebody asked her to make a decision, she would say, that's interesting. What do you think we should do? Right? So when people would come in with everything from should we open in a new market to what pen should we reorder? Her response was always, that's interesting. What do you think we should do? Right? And the thing is, by just using that very simple prompt and that small change in behavior, she started to get all this information, right? Well, some people, when they heard that question, just started to panic. And they were like, well, I don't know. You're the executive here. You need to tell me what to do, right? So instantly she knew that that person was struggling and needed some sort of coaching and help. But other people would go, well, here's our three options. We could open in Europe. We could open in Asia. We can open in the Americas. I think we should open in Asia. And here's the two reasons why. So instantly she started to learn, if you will, by this small prompt about what people were willing to make decisions and just felt inhibited versus those who were afraid to make decisions and needed help. And that was sort of really the power of this sort of idea, where you sort of start to say and get people to experiment with somewhat uncomfortable, crazy new behaviors, like saying, I'm never going to make a decision, actually making it smaller and say, well, just don't make the decision for 24 hours or maybe 72 hours. And suddenly she got all this new insight and information, and it really allowed her to sort of understand where she was more, but also allowed people who had the talent, who were willing and wanting to make decisions, to be sort of set free. And, you know, that's sort of like a classic example about how we would go about it.
Wow. So I love that. And I'm surprised to hear that one of the sentences, what if actually, if some of our team members are listening to this, Hussam and I use this, like not in the phrasing exactly, oh, that's interesting, but they're like, okay, so what would you do about it? So question for this, and it's turning into a coaching session, but it's interesting. How do you navigate a critical moment? Like, how do you make sure that you have this kind of unlearning process where you will empower your team members and say, okay, you know, that's interesting. What are three solutions that you could think of, like, to solve this problem? What about when it becomes critical? What about when a decision needs to be made, like now, and the right decision needs to be made? And I'm thinking more about the startup environment, for instance, or small company environment. How do you apply those principles that you've discussed with this executive in the top 50 in the Fortune 50? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, like a lot of it is a training, absolutely. And a lot of it is being explicit about what you're trying to do. And then helping and coaching people, as you said, about recognizing when they're doing it and not doing it. Right, like it's important to be explicit about these things. Right, so she was able to label and say, I think we have a decision-making problem in this company that we need to unlearn. Right, it's like making a blanket statement about something that you see as a challenge and needs to be addressed. So instantly people become aware of it. Right, and then the sort of coaching element is a commitment on their part to say, right, I'm going to behave differently. So when somebody asks me what the answer is, my response is not going to be the answer. It's going to be helping the person who's asking the question, you know, develop their own ideas about what the ideal answer is. And it's actually, it's not that you're necessarily trying to catch people out, but you're trying to get them to develop this muscle, this confidence that they actually have a lot of the answers and that they can surface the options. And really, you know, as a leader, you know, you can never understand all the context that someone close to a piece of work has. But what you can understand is their critical thinking. Is it shallow? Is it deep? Is it well thought out? Have they actually gone through the process of really looking at alternatives, different perspectives? And the way you find that out is when you get someone to sort of explain the problem they're facing and the different options that they've looked at. You know, and it's so famous in this idea of understanding people's critical thinking. You know, probably the classic example is people often say, well, what's it been like to be interviewed by Elon Musk? And he famously says, I just ask people, what's the hardest problem you've ever solved? And then explain to me how you went about solving it. You know, and straight away, you sort of get this insight into how people think, what things they try, what worked, what didn't, what would they do differently. And there's a whole richness of context to actually understand people. So I think it's the best interview question of all time, because it really gets you people to sort of be able to share about something they're proud that they solved that was incredibly hard. But you can't answer that question unless you solved the problem, you know, and it really brings out the true depth of someone's understanding of a topic. So that's sort of the way I tend to think about these things.
And so who ended up making the decisions in regards to pens in that bag in the end?
Exactly, right? That's what everybody wanted to know. That was like the one decision everybody wanted to make.
Crux. So bring us back to your podcast then, Barry. So Unlearn is the name of your podcast, right? But so the origins is from that book. And so I would understand that the concept of the podcast is to talk about exactly this, like the concept of unlearning with people within organizations that have maybe things to deconstruct, if that's English. Or what is it about?
Yeah, like the inspiration for the podcast really was helping people share moments where their skills, their behavior, their mindset was suddenly a blocker. It was an inhibitor to their success and how they learned to let go of past success to achieve extraordinary results in the future. You know, and I think we've all been there in our careers, in our life, where things that made us successful in the past suddenly stop working or don't work for us anymore. We've all had to sort of adapt and change our behavior in order to get to the next level. You know, very simple examples are often when you're in a company and you might be an individual contributor, and because you do that job well, you suddenly get promoted to manage other contributors, you know, and all the skills that made you successful as a contributor suddenly don't work anymore when you're a manager, right? You can't do everybody's work for them and the team succeed. You have to learn how to create an environment where others can succeed and you're guiding them. So like that's a very classic example that most people go through. And what I found as I would sort of look and tried to interview and spend time with people who had solved really hard challenges or were working on very difficult tasks, is a lot of their experience had been they had to change themselves as a person, as a leader, about how they would sort of tackle challenges. And really asking them these moments about where they had these sort of seminal experiences where they had to change themselves as well as the way they behave to be successful was just one of the most fun questions I could ever think of. And to be honest, when people come on the show, that's something that they thoroughly enjoy. You know, when you ask them to talk about, if you will, like a turning point or an inflection point in themselves or their career, you know, you just get the most wonderful stories and examples that people share. And, you know, as I say, we've done over 125,000 our shows now, and it's every one of them is a joy. I feel like it's a free personal development class where I get to learn from some of the smartest people on the planet, where they're sharing, you know, their own life experiences. And, you know, it's a joy to do it.
But so let me ask you then, Barry, what has been the inflection point in your personal development, maybe coming up with that podcast or that book? Like, what has it been for you?
Well, the book is sort of a fun example, right, for me, because I have a solid history of sort of D minuses in English literature. Like, I'm dyslexic. I was never able to be good at English and writing in school. I still think if my English teacher knew I'd written two books, they would probably say, I don't believe it. You know, and a lot of it for me was this idea. I had this picture of, to be a writer, you sort of had to be like Hemingway, you know, sitting in by a roaring fire with a purple sort of velvet jacket on and a beautiful sort of red wine, you know, and just writing pages and pages. And this was sort of the archetype that had been painted to me of what writers did and how they did it. And that just wasn't me, you know, and I would sort of try forever to get a few words down. And obviously there'd be mistakes or spelling mistakes or typos or whatever. And they were all these inhibitors to sort of get me to write, you know. But then the sort of huge breakthrough for me was I was sitting there one day going, well, actually, a book isn't about typing or writing. It's really just content. And there's so many ways that you can create content. It doesn't have to be just writing or typing. So it really got me thinking about, you know, what are the options and things that I could do. And I thought about what's the best way for me to create content. And the answer for me was not typing. It was actually talking. So what I actually did is I hired a journalist, and I had sort of mapped out, if you like, the structure of how I wanted to create this book. And what they would do is we would sit down sort of every day, and they would interview me around sort of questions or topics around each chapter in the book. And we would record the interview. Then once we finished the recording, we would send a transcription to artificial intelligence that would sort of transcribe the entire talk instantly. And then the journalist would essentially start marking up that transcript and copy editing it and sending it back to me literally within like sort of 5 or 6 hours. And then suddenly we'd sort of created a prototype, if you will, of the chapter. Literally in a couple of hours. And then I could read it and go, well, actually, this is wrong and it's missing a bit. And, oh, I forgot to tell that story. So we were iterating the chapter then almost instantly. And then for me, then that was just suddenly the challenge of like trying to create the first draft sort of disappeared. It was much more a process of iteration and improvement because I was getting the first chapters down really quickly. And then that's how I wrote the whole entire book of Unlearn. I didn't actually type any of it. I talked it all. And the most interesting part, I think, today is that people, when they're reading the book, sort of get in touch with me and they go, oh, my God, I feel like I was sort of like listening to you talk about this, which, again, is one of these things that writers often crave is, how can they capture their authentic voice in the words? But for me, it was my authentic voice. It was just copy edited. And that was probably one of the unlearnings for me.
So I'm reading and listening a lot about a lot of authors who have a ghostwriter nowadays, right? It's like it's like that how, this is how lots of books are written nowadays. That's a crazy story. That's a super cool one. Have you recorded an audiobook version of this, then, Barry?
Well, unfortunately, the publisher didn't want me to record the audiobook. They hired an actor to do it. Yeah, we often joke is because I don't have an American accent. They thought that it wouldn't sell as well. Yeah, so lots of people get sort of disappointed when they download the audiobook because they're like, this isn't Barry speaking it, you know, so
that's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. But unfortunately, you know, when you sign these publishing deals, the publishers basically get to make some decisions that are out of your hands. And my ability to record my own podcast and ultimately my own audiobook. Well, maybe that's why I did start the podcast is because I was going to show them that we could do it.
100%. And so will there be a second book like this, then, Barry?
Well, you know, I often joke, I'm in the middle of building a new startup or a venture studio, which is called Nobody Studios, and we're building over 100 startups at the moment. So I'm pretty busy focusing on building at the moment. But yeah, maybe when we finish doing some building and I have time to reflect, I'll certainly want to write down the lessons learned from building 100 companies in 5 years, and maybe there's another book there.
Cool. I want to get into this. But so just out of curiosity, what type of accent do you have according to your editor, if not American?
No, I'm Irish. I grew up in just outside of Dublin in a town called Skerries in North County Dublin. But I've lived in 7 different countries for over nearly 5 years. So it's definitely become a international global accent over time. But, you know, I think I have that gift. Maybe you have it too. When I go back to Ireland, everyone says I don't sound Irish. And yet when I'm overseas, most people say that I sound Irish almost instantly. So, you know, it's always the fun of traveling.
There is an absolute truth in that. And, you know, the thing is, so it's been 5 years that I walk and talk to most of my relatives in English. And now when I come back to France, I have like my French level has gone terribly down. I'm using these English words and I sound so arrogant. So like, who the hell is this guy putting some English words in the south of France? Like, F off. So yes, I feel the pain. I feel the pain. Barry, talk to us about Nobody Studio. What are you doing there exactly? What's the project?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been lucky enough to be involved in startups for most of my career, and building early stage companies has always been a fun sort of calling for me. And then over the last years after I wrote the boats of the books, and I got to travel all around the world and work with lots of different companies, but I felt like I was falling into this trap of talking about how to build things rather than actually doing it. So I was looking for this opportunity to put a lot of my energy and experience into building equity in lots of different businesses at the same time, or helping entrepreneurs build companies, multiple companies in parallel. And then the notion of the venture studio was sort of introduced to me, which is really this, if you think of it as an entity, where you bring together the best of venture capital incubators and accelerators and roll it all into one business. So we sort of raise money and have a bunch of our own ideas of companies we want to build. And then we literally start testing the ideas and scaling them into, you know, scalable businesses ultimately, and do that lots in parallel. Our stated mission is to do 100 companies over the next 5 years. We've currently got 14 companies in production at the moment. We're in the cusp of doing our Series A. We've done an equity crowdfunding event where over 1,000 investors in 55 different countries now own a piece of our studio and raised close to $1 million on top of everything else that we've raised through our seed funding. So it's been an absolute whirlwind of a ride. A lot of this stuff has never been done before. And that's often what attracts me to these journeys, is I like doing things when people say that it's impossible, it's never been done, it's never going to work. That's pretty much where I grab my bag and jump on the airplane and say, you know, I'll take that ticket and see where we go. And that's always been something I've followed throughout my life and career, that's always yielded, you know, great returns for me.
So did you just say that you build the companies yourself? It's not like you invest within young startup, or in that case, startupers. It's more like we build the companies ourselves. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So we have lots of ideas of businesses that we think would be interesting and fun and valuable companies to create. And we literally start testing the ideas. And really, as the company or the idea starts to show fruit and excitement, then we just start finding people to come and work on it, just like a startup. So we're the founders of pretty much every company that we work with. There's one or two companies that maybe join our studio, but when they're very, very young, like they wouldn't have to have taken external capital, or maybe they're just at the prototype stage. But we're co-founders of every business that we create. And that means that we've sort of have this chance to build tens, if not hundreds, of companies over the next couple of years. And it's a lot of fun trying to figure out ideas from their infancy right through to them being scalable, repeatable business models. And I thoroughly enjoy that process, and it makes me jump out of bed every morning and keep doing it.
That's so cool. So if anybody, who knows, if anybody listening to us right now wants to join the Nobody Studio and submit an ID, is this how it works? Like people can come to you, hey, I have this crazy ID, and Barry, listen to me, an impossible one. Are you in? And we can join the studio?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they can just go to nobodystudios.com and anyone who's interested can submit an idea to the studio. And, you know, if we think it's a great idea and you want to help us work on it, there's a chance for you to join the studio and be part of building that company. And it's one of the reasons we did this idea of an equity crowdfunding. We're a big believer in the power of the crowd. So suddenly when we held an equity crowdfunding event and over 1,000 people invested in the studio, those 1,000 people are bringing their talent, their influence, their capital to the studio. So instantly we went from, you know, a company that had maybe 75 people to a company that had 1,300 people, and everyone submitting ideas, contributing, testing, giving feedback, which has been a great way to help us accelerate our growth.
So if I refer to the number one, among others, principle for successful startups from Steve Jobs, it's focus. And I have the feeling that this is getting a bit in the opposite direction here then, right? If you venture into so many business ideas with that many people, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, so it's a question that we get a lot, right? Like typically for most venture studios or venture builders, they have a very specific domain that they operate in. They might specialize in health tech or e-commerce or hardware devices. But, you know, what we've learned is we have such a broad network of talented entrepreneurs that they have connections, ideas, interests in a broad range of areas. And really, the only people that need to have focus are the founding team that are focused on building their startup. So our portfolio can have hotel tech, it can have health and wellness, it can have e-commerce, marketplaces, SaaS businesses, because everyone who's supporting those companies has lots of experience and networks and talents that they can bring to bear. And it's really just that team that needs to focus on the problem that they're trying to solve. So that's really the goal, you know, of the startups. And the focus of the studio is essentially to create systems and structures and processes that allow these businesses get to the maximum of their potential. So it's sort of like a division of labor, if you will, about what people are focused on and how we can sort of grow and scale and sustain our businesses.
So what's the most impossible company and concept you guys have launched? What's your favorite one, Barry?
Well, look, there's so many, right? But I think one of the most interesting problems for me right now is in the health and wellness space, you know, and one of the hardest things for people who are maybe trying to get fitter or lose weight or get more productive is it's very easy for them to find out lagging indicators about how you're doing. A simple example is like when you're trying to lose weight, a lagging indicator is when you stand on the weighing scales and it tells me that I'm like 90 kilos. And I'm like, okay, great, but I want to get to 85, but it doesn't tell me how to do that, right? And the actual leading indicators to helping you lose weight are your ability to burn calories and your ability to count the calories that you are sort of consuming. You know, so all of these apps like food tracking apps and all these things are often very inaccurate because you're reliant on a person sort of putting in the correct data and sort of understanding like how many calories is an apple, is a sandwich, is something that a piece of cheese. It's impossible for them to be accurate in doing that. Similarly, even when they do some exercise, they might be able to track that they've ran for 10 minutes and it's like 50 calories or something like this. But again, how does that feed into what you're trying to achieve? So one of the biggest problems and maybe potentials with things like AI and this automatic robotic processing and scanning is that you can make it easier for people to start to do this work without having to think about it. So I think whoever can solve that problem about the ability to accurately predict calorie intake and what people are eating is literally going to become, a trillionaire if they can crack that problem. So I'm always interested in anything that is more predictive insights for customers rather than reactive insights, which is after the fact. And So we're focusing on a lot of businesses that are trying to solve these sort of predicting insights where people can then change their behavior and get to the outcomes they want.
I love that. So you have a few other business ventures, Barry. You yourself, right? You're consultant, coach, author. Can you walk us through how you link the podcast with some, or if not all, of your business activities, especially in the sense of, I've seen that you have pretty big time guests on your show. How is that helping you with networking business models? I mean, I wouldn't say that Nobody Studio is literally based on networking, but having those big names in your contact list definitely helps in different business ventures. So how do you link the two, the podcast and the different activities?
Yeah, so I very much have a portfolio type career. You know, I do everything from writing books to recording podcasts to consulting, advising startups, and actually build startups myself. And one of the things I've always found is this philosophy of sort of building in the open is really powerful for people. And the idea behind it is that you're sharing what you're learning with people as you go on these often challenging or difficult missions. And by putting out there what you're experiencing or things that you try, it becomes a bit of a lightning rod for other people that are trying to do difficult tasks. And you sort of become a community, if you will, of sharing ideas of what worked and what didn't. And my first understanding of that, the power of that, was really writing. So I wrote a blog, I published it, I thought nobody would read it, but suddenly I had people from all over the world like sending me messages going, oh my God, that's what I think too, or I've tried that. And really the writing was the first step and the book was the second. And then what I've found is sort of infinitely scalable as this medium has become more and more popular is the ability to share audio and visual content around what you're doing. And really then once I was sort of doing that, I just had so many amazing people that I worked with over the course of my career, whether it was, you know, recent guests I've had on the show, like the CTO of McDonald's, or maybe the head of sustainability for AWS, or all these like massive companies and people who are doing really hard things and solving them in very interesting ways. You know, they've sort of become my friends as much as they were my clients originally, because when you work on very difficult things and you solve them together, you really get to know the people at a different level. So when I said I was going to do a podcast to talk about, you know, moments we've had to unlearn on these tough projects, everyone has always said yes. And if anything, they've introduced me to another person who, you know, would be great to be on the show. And it's been a real joy to sort of record all of these episodes with super smart people with great stories and experiences, and hopefully continue to share them with the world.
So I'm going to ask this in an interested manner, obviously. What's the starting point of all this? How do you end up interviewing CTOs of McDonald's and head of sustainability at AWS? Like, where do you start when you want to build something like that? And I was going to say a portfolio of acquaintances, but that's not really the term. Like, friends through networking and creating content, where do you start to arrive there eventually?
Yeah, well, one of the philosophies in Unlearn is this notion of think big, but start small and learn fast. And really the idea is that it's important to have a big aspiration or goal or objective that you're trying to achieve. You know, for me, I often thought about how do I do things that have never been done before? Or how can I find other people that are interested in doing these types of challenges? And the starting small then was really like writing a tweet, if you will, or writing a LinkedIn post, or writing a blog, or sharing what I was doing in the world. And interestingly, by doing that in sort of my first sort of starting of that in 2010 or 11, I was sharing these blogs, or people in my team were encouraging me to write about the work we were doing, like testing our customers and learning what products worked, or prototyping. And, you know, people were like, this is really fascinating. More people should learn about this. And it was my team that encouraged me to write these blogs. And by writing those blogs, then suddenly other people in my company sort of found out what I was doing and shared it with other people and their friends and their companies. And it led to one of my colleagues who was very famous author reaching out to me and saying, I'm writing a book and would I like to contribute a few chapters to it? And at the time, you know, I mentioned before I was dyslexic and I had this terrible record in English literature. So I was sort of afraid to ever, like I would have loved to have written a book, but it was such a mammoth task, I thought I'd never do it. But doing it in a team, I was like, oh, maybe I could just write a few chapters and get it done. And, you know, that got me to write Lean Enterprise, which was a book that just really, again, caught a wave of what people were sort of thinking at the time. And again, that book then opened up a whole new reservoir of people who were, you know, executives in these Fortune 500 companies. And I was in rooms with them talking about how I'd built products before. And, you know, these people just, you got to know them. They learned to trust one another, work together. So then when I said I'd start a podcast to share more of what we've done, you know, most people are often honored to be invited to be on a podcast and share their stories. And when you sort of know them personally, you can get to a whole other level of intimate conversation, I guess. And then opening up and sharing, you know, things they tried, things that didn't work. And most people, when they listen to the Unlearn show, are constantly will tell me that they feel like they're sitting down at a coffee shop just listening into a conversation between me and, you know, the CTO of McDonald's. And it's just a great learning environment. And that's something, you know, that's been really beneficial to me. And the fact that I can record that and scale it and share it with hundreds and millions of people is sort of, again, a joy of technology and something I get a lot of pleasure from.
I love that. What has been your biggest challenge when it comes to podcasting? What has been the roadblock that you had to walk around? What are difficulties that you face as a podcaster, and especially at that scale, especially in terms of guests?
Yeah, well, I think like everybody, my first show was terrible. And, you know, the sort of hardest part, I think, is getting started in some respects. You know, there's you can create a million reasons why this is not going to work. Nobody would listen to it. I'll sound stupid. You know, all the voices go into your head about why this is a bad idea and you should never embarrass yourself or any guest by inviting them to be on your show. But, you know, something that sort of compelled me to say I should try this and give it a go. You know, not what I found when I reached out to like sort of five people who I knew really well, who I felt like I could be comfortable talking with, who I felt were willing to be like the first people to try this experiment with me. In many respects, you know, I look back now at those first few shows and my style actually of interviewing has just got so much, well, I hope better. And I actually am just being more of myself has allowed the show to sort of get even better, you know. And if anyone goes back and listens to the first show, it's with someone called Kent Beck, who famously created a style of software engineering called test-driven development. He was a pioneer of the agile software development movement. And Mark Zuckerberg actually hired him to work in Facebook and train all of the engineers about how to be a better engineer in the very earliest days of Facebook as well. And then I'm sitting in his house in San Francisco, you know, trying to learn how to do a podcast interview. And, you know, he's funnily saying to me, even on the show, about how nervous I was when we started and trying to find my feet. And it's such a great show. And, you know, I often go back sometimes and listen to it just to remind myself, you know, how someone like that was willing to sort of take a shot and experiment and try something with me. And, you know, ever since then, you know, the show has continued, hopefully, to go from strength to strength. And more great guests have come on because they, you know, see the caliber of people that have been on before. And so really finding guests, while it is hard, and they've all come from my network, they've all come from people I've worked with, people I know. And, you know, that's very much the focus is I want to have people on the show that have who have built things, who have been involved in solving hard problems and their ability to share their stories about how they did that. And I think that's one of the most fun parts of actually making the show.
So I think being told that by listening to the show, we have the impression of listening to two friends discussing at the coffee shop and being part of that conversation, I think that's probably the best compliment you can receive as a podcaster, because that's in an interview-based, interview-style podcast, that's what you want to aim for. You want people to like engage and be like, oh my God, those are two friends and I'm part of their inner circle. How do you, because you mentioned this very precisely, how do you improve your interviewing style then, Barry? And from like the caliber of the guests you had as well, 120 episodes, 120 plus episodes, how do you improve the way you interview? What have you learned and unlearned to become that great interviewer?
Yeah, so one of the things I learned along the way is I used to feel like it was just my job to interview and ask questions all the time, you know? And I think that's a helpful way to do a show. But when you're trying to create like this feel that it's a conversation, you know, you also have to like share your own stories too as well. You know, so one of the bits of feedback that I had from a few people in the beginning is they were like, yeah, look, it was great to hear like Gibson Biddle, the former chief product officer for Netflix. It was great to hear him tell all the stories about Netflix. But I also want to know about your stories too. And it was often a confidence thing for me where I felt like, well, how can I share my stories that can be relevant compared to someone who's established or as well known as Gib or these other people. But actually, that's what a great conversation is. You know, you think about a lot of the podcasts or shows that you listen to, and the best ones are where it's a dialogue, right? It's back and forth. It's like, you know, you're telling me a story and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Something like that happened to me and here's how I dealt with that problem. And you know, I'm sure you've seen this even in your own show on Treasury as well, where the most fun shows is it's a conversation, right? It's not like a sort of interrogation or a set. It's a discussion between people about ideas. And it's a sort of back and forth. It's a dance. It's a discussion. It's a dialogue. And that's actually, you know, one of the things that I found was a huge breakthrough for me. Is I sort of had to unlearn that podcasting was not just me sitting there asking people, you know, questions. It was actually having a discussion. And that sort of was probably one of the steps that really transformed how I sort of went about doing my shows and created, as you've described, this feeling of people sitting there, you know, having a coffee together and folks just sort of listening along.
Yeah. So I think a great way to hack that, and which I think, in my humble opinion, explains part of the success of our first show, Corporate Treasury 101, is that we started it together with Hussam. So we were two friends at the beginning, just discussing between ourselves. So it was not really an interview style podcast because it was just us two. But then when we started inviting guests, we were, Hussam and I, with kind of our game as best friends, buddies, who like interview, had prepared, but also have a kind of interaction between themselves, which is like any interaction you would have with one of your best friends, right? Which brings that little touch of like fun and games and like, hey, this interview is about learning and like being educational and like interviewing big time people in the finance world. But it's also like making it not less serious, but more like, hey, we're also here to, the best way to learn is to have fun whilst learning. And this is what we're going to bring you. So probably if you're starting in the podcast world, starting a podcast with a mate and like somebody you know really well, with whom you can have that kind of game during the interviews, is probably a good way to hack that, having a friendly conversation style interview.
I couldn't agree more.
And that's the type of sentence I want to hear from Barry. So what would be your advice for two types of people, Barry? The wannabe podcasters, so people who haven't started yet and who are thinking, hey, I need to start a podcast. They are entrepreneurs, marketers, or like people in big companies, departments, and are like, yeah, we need to start this because it's good for the brand and but don't know where to start. And then the second piece of advice I'd like you to give us is for podcasters already established, but like struggling to connect the dots between their business, their podcast. How do you make it all work together? What's your advice for them?
Yeah, so I think for folks who are new and thinking about doing it, you know, the biggest inhibitor is often yourself, right? Maybe you're worried, you feel embarrassed, you don't know where to get the tools or what kind of equipment that you need, right? And, you know, the only thing I would say is if you're worried about starting, there's lots of great tools on the internet now that you can use to start recording yourself. You can even stream directly onto YouTube yourself or LinkedIn or whatever platform you want. I only think the only bit of equipment that's really worth investing in the beginning is a microphone, because you're asking people to listen to sound, and with a great sound, it's easier for them to listen. If the sound is bad, it's sort of hard and distracting for people. So, you know, that's what I would say is if you're going to spend on any equipment, like even a $100 microphone can have a huge effect on how it sounds. And then the tooling can be, you know, anywhere from just using a LinkedIn live event or going live on Facebook or something. And accept that it's going to suck. You know, it's just not going to be good. It's going to be your first attempt, right? First time you rode a bike, you fell off. First time you probably tried to do anything new, you weren't perfectly successful at it. And you just have to commit to the process that it is a learning process, right? There is no end game. You sort of infinitely have to try and improve and get better at it. And that's sort of really the advice I would say for the more established people is it's always about trying something different, trying something new, making these like little tweaks about how you do things. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to figure out better ways to, you know, share what we're doing with our podcast and connect it to things. You know, and you've been kind enough as well to give us some advice about our show and how we could make it better with, you know, giving people calls to actions at the beginning of the show or encouraging them about ways that to write reviews when they're listening and all these simple things that help just scale the reach. But it's impossible for me to know them all or even sometimes to remember to do them, you know, and that's why I think it's just great to be open to feedback from different people, to constantly ask folks, you know, how could I make this better? Was there something missing? Is there something you've tried? And then give it a go. And as long as you're in that sort of experimentation and testing and learning and being open to feedback and, you know, not pretending that you know it all, that's, I think, where you can have some significant sort of breakthroughs and continually the show get better and better. And, you know, whether you're the top show on Apple and Spotify or you're someone who's just starting out, you know, I think those principles hold through all the way.
Amen. Barry, the question we ask everybody towards the end of this show is, can you give us three podcasts beyond Unlearn, of course, that you listen to that you would recommend listening?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to open my phone and go to my latest downloaded podcast shows and, you know, tell you the ones that I've been listening to most recently. So the one that I downloaded the most, a show that I would I probably recommended the most to people in the last little while, I can think of three of them straight off the top of my head. So the first one is called Lenny's Podcast. Lenny is a product manager who worked at Airbnb in the earliest days of the company. And he did a podcast recently with Brian Chesney, who's the CEO of Airbnb, where he talked about, you know, how they're starting to run the company differently. And it was just a really fascinating show for me. And Lenny has always got some great guests on if you're interested in product management. The other one would be a lady that I really have worked with a lot and was the second guest on my show, a lady called Melissa Perry. She also has a great podcast for early stage product managers or people that are building digital products. It's called Letters to Melissa. I'd highly recommend people check that one out. And then probably a classic that many people already follow, but I just love that he keeps this sort of long format alive. So Lex Friedman, who, you know, just has a great podcast where he will, a humble human being trying to change the way the world is, but he's the only person to ever do a podcast with Jeff Bezos. And their show together, I think, is just something that I thoroughly enjoyed. And, you know, it's just a great, you know, 2 hours of sitting there with, you know, Jeff Bezos and getting to learn what he thinks about everything from space to Amazon and how to make decisions. So, you know, there are three that I would recommend, and shows specifically, and I think, you know, podcasters that just generally have a great insight on product development, innovation, and maybe the future of what we're facing.
Love that. You're very, it's interesting to see, you're very focused on product management and innovation and kind of this environment, like very, very interesting. I didn't know, so Lex Friedman, obviously. I didn't know Lenny and Melissa. We'll definitely give it a go.
Yeah, do, please do. They're both great shows and always have interesting, fun guests.
Barry, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think it was an absolute masterpiece on learning and unlearning stuff. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, look, it's always a pleasure. And again, thank you for sharing some of your stories on the show as well about your own journey and Treasury 101. And, you know, I think we're all learning this together. And as long as you're surrounded by good people, you know, with good principles and trying to make better, I think it's always going to be fun. So again, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the B2B Podcast Stories. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please don't forget to hit subscribe and check us out at ghamarketing.com. Have a great day.